Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Tea and Murder, part interview show, part book club, all Agatha Christie. I'm your host, Rebecca Tundy Norman, and I'm here today with Freya McComish. Freya is a digital designer and filmmaker. In fact, Freya actually designed the logo and brand identity for Tea and Murder, so thank you to Freya for that. She's originally from Australia and grew up in Townsville and Brisbane, and she's half Danish, and she lives here in Copenhagen like I do. In 2013, she and I co-founded Scandinavia Standard, a website on Scandinavian design and culture. Freya is fascinated with woo-woo and the occult, especially astrology and tarot, and is in the process of launching an astrology website called woowoo.oo, which is an amazing name, which is a website on astrology, tarot, and the occult. Welcome, Freya.
Thanks, Rebecca. It's such a pleasure to be here. It's so exciting to see your new baby come to life, Tea and Murder.
I know. It's so funny to do something not like our job together, which we do every day, and do something totally different. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. Well, I guess that when we first met, this was a project that you sort of had in the back of your mind for a while.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that even when we started the website, it was on your bio page, which was like, they were a lot longer at the time, right?
And That's right. Oh my God.
Yeah. I think you said that you had read every single Agatha Christie book. And whenever we got an email, your conversations would always turn to Agatha Christie.
That is, I completely forgot about that. But the most emails I got at that period when we had those long bios about our lives was that people would say, I also love Agatha Christie. That is so funny that you remember that. Wow.
I think you loved it at first, but after a while it was sort of a...
It was a bit of a distraction from like the Scandinavian design element of our website. So yeah, I think we cut down the bios like a couple of years ago to be just like, Rebecca lives in Denmark, whatever. No. So you know about my relationship to Agatha Christie because I've been telling you about it for literally a decade. But tell me about your relationship to Agatha Christie. Do you know a lot about her work? Have you read a lot of her work? Like, what's your connection with her?
Okay. So my connection with Agatha Christie, I grew up in Australia and I loved watching Poirot and Miss Marple with my grandma growing up. Obviously, Australia has a lot of links to the UK, but otherwise, I don't have a long, deep history with Agatha. I think that it was something that I always wanted to get around to reading more.
You're a big reader, so it's like you were just reading other stuff, basically. Like it's not.
It was always on the list, yeah. And I think that I think the very first time I was introduced was watching the 1945 version of And Then There Were None with my dad.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which is fantastic, actually. It was black and white and very, very dramatic.
Yeah, like very ominous. And then, everything's ominous.
Very ominous. And then I obviously I read the book for the first time when you started the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And then otherwise, yeah, years later, when visiting my, Danish auntie, Auntie Hannah in Malta, she actually really introduced me to the books and spoke to me about them a lot. She was obsessed. And she also happened to be an astrologer. She was sort of this, kind of, a spiritual specialist of sorts, and people would seek her out in Malta. And
my God, yeah, that's so interesting.
So it all comes together.
It all comes together as it always does. So this episode is a little bit different because we kind of have you here as a specialist, not on Agatha Christie, but on astrology. And you are going to be sharing Agatha Christie's astrology birth chart with us. And before we get into that, I want you to tell me a little bit about how did you get into astrology and how do you use it in your daily life?
Sure. So for me, I got into astrology originally as a result of my father. I think that I came in with a very skeptical mind.
Mm.
He was interested in astrology, but I grew up with my mom and my stepdad. They were less interested. So I think, though, for me, over time, I realized that it was just a fantastic tool for looking in and trying to increase self-awareness. It's a great tool for self-reflection, looking at opportunities in life. And, it's a great tool overall. I also think it was really helpful for me to connect with my dad in a way. Mm. I think that what happened was that he was so interested in understanding the world through the lens of astrology. And then I think by coming to him with certain problems, he would use his astrological framework to explain things to me. And I think that was a really great way to bond with him.
Yeah, absolutely. And
yeah.
I mean, you say that you came to it as a skeptic, and I totally know what you mean. But I do, can you talk a little bit about your embrace of it as well? Because you are, I mean, I don't know if you consider yourself an expert, but I always think of you as such. And how have you kind of embraced it in your life?
Yeah, I think that over the years, I've come to understand that it's more a part of myself. And I think in the past, though, in the 90s and in the early 2000s, it wasn't as mainstream as it is now. So
yeah.
I think that it was just a secret part of myself that I had in my filing cabinet, I had all these different charts and books, but I talked to my sister about it. I talked to my dad about it, but I didn't really talk to other people about it because it was met with, so much disdain and also I consider myself to be quite a scientific person as well.
Yeah,
So I think that over time though, I came to accept that, it's just a very useful tool. Mm-hmm. And also over time, noticing some patterns and things that are speaking to something larger than ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, even when you asked me to come on this podcast, I was a little reluctant because as much as people are much more open about this these days, it was something that I was still kind of keeping to myself a bit.
Yeah. And that's so funny because you did say that to me and I was surprised because you've always talked to me about astrology and I've always known that that's a part of you and loved that it's a part of you because you, as you say, you are such a scientific and quite technical person. So that you have this side of yourself that is totally different and very embracing of this system is so, I think, great and cool. And I've always really liked it about you.
Especially the early days when I'd be like, would you mind us delaying that in very important meeting?
Yeah, I know. I was like, what now? And so this is a good place for me to say, in terms of my own understanding and around astrology, I am definitely coming to this podcast and to life in general with you as my business partner as a newbie in this. I don't know that much about astrology, but I'm very open-minded in the sense that I think anything that you keep calling it a tool. And I think that's what it is. Anytime anyone has a tool at their their disposal that they use to like learn more about themselves or like learn about their patterns or like how they interact with others and try to improve that is helpful and useful and wonderful. And it's also lovely to have things that you believe in that are, as you say, a little bit bigger than yourself. But for me, it's not something I particularly have ever connected to, but I want to just say, like, in terms of this podcast, I'm coming to this as like a newbie with an open mind. So that's kind of my approach to like our conversation here.
Excellent. I'm so glad to hear. Yeah. I think that's always been so nice about it is that you've always made me feel very comfortable about sharing it. At the end of the day, it's one of many tools.
Of course. And I will say, yeah. I don't know if this will resonate with any of our listeners, but I am a Sagittarius. So I don't know.
So there you go.
But you're
such a Sagittarius.
Am I really? Okay. That's interesting to hear. Yes. But so now let's dive.
Which I love.
Good. That's a good thing. Now let's dive into this birth chart. So first, before you take us through Christy's birth chart, will you tell us what a birth chart is and how you go about creating one?
Sure thing. So a birth chart is essentially a snapshot of the sky at the exact moment when a person is born in the exact location where they're born. So that's why time, location, date are so important when you create the chart. And so a lot of people, when they think about astrology, they think about, oh, I'm a Sagittarius, I'm a Taurus, mm-hmm. I'm a Leo. That's actually just referring to your sun sign. And a chart actually contains not just the location of the sun, but also the moon and all the other planets and astrological points. And not only their placements, but how they aspect each other. So it's very complicated, mm-hmm. and in the same way that humans are very complicated.
Mm. Okay, interesting. So how would you go about finding someone, your birth chart or someone's birth chart?
Well, these days it's very, very easy. You can just look it up online. First of all, you've got to get the data from your parents. Sometimes it's you can also get it in birth records. But there's so many different resources, astro.com, Astrology Zone, AstroSeek. They've all got fantastic resources out there. In the old days, it was so much more complicated. I think that my dad paid a fortune in the early 90s for astrology software so that he wouldn't have to draw it by hand. But even those charts that they had at the time, they didn't contain the aspects. It still involved like a lot of maths and calculations for him to interpret it.
So you have to you have to become like Galileo in order to do a birth chart in the 90s.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
I think that it does appeal to astrology. It appeals to people with like a very analytical mind. Mm-hmm. It often really appeals to like Virgos, for example.
That's so interesting.
I think that's very relevant to Agatha, who has her son in Virgo as well.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's dive in. Take us through Agatha Christie's astrological birth chart. I'm so excited to hear about this.
Well, and I think this is the thing as well. Like when you first asked me about looking into her birth chart, I think that my first thought was, okay, part of the fun is actually figuring out, guessing what they are in advance. And so I actually jotted down some notes because I was just – obviously, I don't have that in-depth knowledge of Agatha like you do and like your listeners do, mm-hmm. But I have some preconceived ideas.
Okay.
And I think that I just thought, okay, she's definitely going to have a heavy Mercury influence.
Uh-huh.
So Mercury is the planet of communications, thinking. It's very, very common in writers' charts. I also thought that she would have a really strong Libra influence.
Okay.
I felt that her style of writing, I always had the impression that it's more about justice. It's not so postmodern in terms of gory psychological depth. It's more about this idea of justice and right and wrong in a way.
Yeah.
There are psychological elements, but I felt that that would be stronger than I think that Libra and justice would be stronger than more of like a Scorpio influence.
Okay.
And I also thought that she might have a really strong Neptune, which is a higher level. The planet is a higher level of Mercury. And it's also really helpful for artists and creators.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that they were my guesses. And I was very shocked. Not shocked, but actually it was very affirming, maybe self-validating to see that all these elements were so strong in her chart.
No way. That's amazing.
Well, the very first one, I think, oh, actually, I forgot this other, I also forgot to mention the Virgo element, which I mentioned earlier, which is that really, that analytical element. She seems very focused on the details, and she's really good at sizing up situations and sort of making judgments and really getting into the nitty gritty. Sort of this logical left brain Gemini influence. So, when I opened up her chart, the first thing I saw was that her sun was in Virgo.
Okay.
And
what that means is, like, if someone asked her, like, what is your sign? She would say, I'm a Virgo.
She would say I'm a Virgo.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And it's actually interesting because I think I've read both that she was skeptical of astrology herself, but also there was a questionnaire that was in a magazine somewhere where she said that one of her pastimes was looking at astrology. So I think that it doesn't necessarily mean she was a huge fan, but like I think she was. I think it's also a great tool for writers to look into. And what do you think about that, Rebecca?
I mean, that's so fascinating. And I like, what do I think about her potentially being interested in astrology?
Yeah,
I can totally see it. I mean, I think as we'll talk about in the book that you read for this podcast, we both read The Pale Horse. She's very interested in spiritualism and the occult, and I think brings those elements into a lot of her books and stories, actually. But I think usually uses it as a plot device, and we'll kind of talk about that. But in order to use it as a plot device, you have to learn about it and know about it and be interested in it enough to actually use it. So that doesn't surprise me whatsoever. Yes.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. So, as we were explaining, her son is in Virgo, and it means that she has a need for order and she has a fantastic attention to detail. She's quite logical and practical minded. I think she's like a bit of a perfectionist at heart and has a little bit of a critical eye. Mm-hmm. Think that it goes to sort of show that she's quite like laser sharp. And the next element though that we'll look into here is the Libra influence. So she has Libra in her 10th house. So this is in astrology, there's not only the house placements. There's not only the planet placements. Mm-hmm. There's also the houses.
Okay.
And the houses, what they do is they actually position the planets in different areas of your life. And so for her, her 10th house, which is directly above you, it was directly above at the point she was born, is in Libra. And that is the house of her career. And so that means that she is inclined to express this part of herself in her career and be drawn towards areas of justice.
Wow, that's wild.
Yeah. So I think that the justice element, as I mentioned earlier, is really important in Christie novels. At the end of it, there's a sort of a sense that the balance is restored. And so whether or not the killer survives or not, there is a sense of justice.
Yeah.
And then also this feeling that the community is then safe again.
Yeah.
So I think that that Libras generally, they like to have this sense of certainty at the end.
Okay.
And there's also like a gentle humor to it as well and a certain beauty. So I think that that's something that Christie really, really does well in her work and brings into her work. And you can see it in her chart there in the 10th house.
That's incredible.
I think also she's definitely a product of her time with that as well, because not only does she have her 10th house in Libra, her house of work and career, she also has her Uranus up there. And that is the planet that more it has to do with change, but it's also a generational planet. Mm. And so I think that she was sort of part of a bigger generation that was looking at this sense of justice and looking at having these more clear cut stories rather than going into something really deep and darker like that you'd see in Scorpios or Zodiac killers or things like that.
Okay. And that aligns so interestingly because, you know, she was part of like the golden age of mysteries. So like that mysteries were of her kind were happening on a really large scale at that time.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I think that there is so much to go into in terms of her chart because she also has her moon in Libra. Okay. So that means that she finds it easy to relate to other people and see other people. And then by seeing other people, she can understand herself more. Mm. And I think that she seems to be very charming as well. And she would find it very easy to like relate to other people.
Yes.
I think that what's also interesting is that this strong Mercury influence that she has. And I think that the last element that's interesting to look into is that she's actually a Sagittarius rising. So It means that the moment that she was born, she had Sagittarius on the horizon. So her ascendant is actually the same as you, Rebecca. But,
amazing.
Your sun sign.
Interesting. And what does that mean, like personality wise, or what characteristics does that contain?
Well, it's actually associated with sort of more optimism, enthusiasm, adventure, curiosity, and a love of exploration. Mm-hmm. So if you have Sagittarius rising, you might take a lot of pleasure in going out and exploring other cultures. And when people meet you, they're aware of that curiosity and that sense of expansion that you have in your demeanor.
That is so interesting. And that like connects directly to her love of archaeology and how she would go on archaeological expeditions with her second husband.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that what's so interesting about her chart is it's just, I feel like there's so many elements altogether of her love of mystery, her love of justice, her love of exploration and travel, and also in terms of her Mercury placements, how gifted she could be as a writer. Yeah. But ultimately, when it comes to the birth chart, it's all about just an opportunity. It's not saying that she was destined to be a writer.
Right.
It's just that she had a really good basis to come from. And I haven't touched upon the aspects, but she is able, even if she has some oppositions or squares or harder aspects in her chart, they can actually really help her. And she can use them as opportunities for growth in a way. And but ultimately it comes down to her own choice.
Yeah.
With that. Yeah.
That's
all of our choices with our charts.
That's such an interesting point. Like, is that something that you feel is maybe misunderstood about astrology, that it's kind of like a fatalistic belief system as opposed to like about opportunity?
Yeah, I think so. I think that I guess like all tools, it comes down to how you want to actually use them in your life. And if you're seeing it, if you're reading a chart and seeing it as predestined, then that can be very problematic because ultimately free will is such an important part of living a life where you feel a sense of control, autonomy. And I think that what's kind of nice about it though is you can sometimes, you might have an element of your chart that maybe you don't see in yourself so much, but then over time becomes more apparent. And you'll often see that with like signs in Capricorn, which like grow over time as you get older, and things that also start to fade away. I have elements of my own chart which I look at that I'm very grateful that I don't feel they express themselves in me so much anymore, but they are definitely a foundational part of who I am and the lessons that I learned from those aspects.
Oh, interesting. Do you find that there are other ways that people might like misuse astrology, for instance, or things that you really want people to like understand about how they should use astrology, or your feelings about that?
Yeah, I guess the one thing I always harp on about over and over again is just like it is an opportunity. And I think that there are definitely a lot of situations where it can be misused. And obviously this is something that the pale horse looks into.
Yes.
But there's all sorts of problems in terms of like spiritual bypassing, cultural appropriation and like guru worship. It's really a whole, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a whole mass of problematic issues all in one. But I think at the same time, you can, if you're aware of these issues, mm-hmm. then it's also like a very good, it's a tool for good.
Fantastic.
Did I answer your question there, Rebecca?
You absolutely answered my question. And yeah. I think just it's so much to think about in terms of, because I do think sometimes people can be a little bit dismissive or, you know, if they don't really understand astrology, they can not understand how it can be a useful tool in your life. So I think it's just so helpful that you're like shedding light on that. And as you say, in light of the pale horse, which we're going to talk about now, it really is helpful. So I am just going to give a little historical note quickly about the pale horse. And then we can start our book club portion of the podcast.
Yes. So
The Pale Horse was published in the UK in 1961 and the US in 62. It was published the same year as the short story collection Double Sin and Other Stories. It was preceded by The Adventure of the Christmas Pudding, which is also a Poirot short story book, and followed by The Mirror Cracked from Side to Side, which is a Marple, which I love, and also the play Rats. The book uses themes of the supernatural as a backdrop for crime, as we've talked about previously. This is not the first time Christie does this. She does use a similar plot device in The Sittaford Mystery, as well as stories like The Idle House of Astarte, Blue Geranium, and Motive First Opportunity, all of which are in The 13 Problems, which is a Marple book of short stories. Christie draws on spiritualism occasionally in her work, and I would say that for the most part, she does that pretty non-judgmentally, but kind of recognizes the ways it can be used to manipulate people, particularly when they are vulnerable. So when they're sick or in grief, for example, is a big part of how she uses spiritualism as a manipulation tool. The time at which the book was written, which would have been around 1960, was obviously a time of great change, both for the UK and around the world. And I think that is reflected in this book, less in terms of its use of like the pale horse and spiritualism, and more so in terms of the tension that the narrator, Mark Easterbrook, feels between kind of his more conservative personality, scholarly, you know, kind of old fashioned, and the quote, new world of Chelsea and the young women therein. My favorite Christie outrage, which is Girls with Unwashed Hair, appears very early in this book, and so you can have fun finding that. The idea for the book was actually planted much earlier than 1960. However, as the character of the pharmacist, Zachariah Osborne, was based on an actual pharmacist that Christie worked with. Despite having a very cherubic face, like Zachariah Osborne, Christie said he felt possibly dangerous. He apparently showed her a lump of cure air that he carried in his pocket in order to, quote, make him feel powerful. So that is an enormous red flag right there. And so when she went to go write this book, he was like the first person that came to mind.
Wow.
Yeah, interesting. So the book was adapted by Sarah Phelps, who has done a number of Christie adaptations for a 2020 TV series. It was also adapted for a 2010 television episode, which turned it into a Marple mystery, which you had said earlier that you watched. That one starred Julia McKenzie as Miss Marple. Interestingly, Christie did actually toy with the idea of making this a Marple. She considered making Mark Easterbrook into Marple's grandnephew, Raymond West's son. Raymond West, who we know is a kind of snobby novelist who also loves his aunt. And it was also made into a 1997 TV movie. Just a little extra fun note, I think that The Pale Horse and The Moving Finger, published, which would have been published 9 years previous in 1942, is the only example of a Poirot Miss Marple universe connection. Mrs. Dane Calthorpe appears in The Moving Finger, as does as the friend of Miss Marple, and then The Pale Horse, she's back. And she knows Ariadne Oliver, who, as we all know, is a friend of Hercule Poirot. Also, Colonel John Despard, I believe is his name, is in Cards on the Table with Rhonda Dawes. Or Rhoda Dawes, I believe. And those people obviously appear as friends of Mark Easterbrook as well. And so they would have met Poirot in Cards on the Table. So I think that's the only time we have examples of universe crossovers where the people in a Marple would have known the people in a Poirot. But listeners can let me know if I'm wrong about that. I'm sure I am somewhere. But I racked my brain and that was what I could come up with. That's the little historical note.
That's so exciting. I love that they've created this. It's interesting that this book isn't with Miss Marple or Poirot. And then somehow it's like it's bringing the different worlds together. I don't know, as a reader, is that kind of exciting for you? It's sort of like fan fiction somehow.
Yeah, it is almost like fan fiction. It's I think because there are such minor characters. I wouldn't say it's so much exciting in terms of the reading of it as like when you make the connection, you're like, oh, cool.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think that I really loved meeting all these different characters. And you know, what's interesting is a lot of some writers do actually create astrological charts for their characters.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. As a way of, exploring possibilities.
That is fascinating. Will you give us a 1 minute or so synopsis of The Pale Horse?
Yes, I will. It is fairly fresh in my mind. I finished reading it yesterday.
Fantastic.
The protagonist is Mark Easterbrook. And so it starts with him witnessing a fight between two girls in a cool cafe in Chelsea with, as you mentioned, the dirty hair.
exactly.
I know you said a quick synopsis, but I do think it's so interesting reading Agatha Christie in the 60s. I was sort of surprised.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was nice. But so he witnesses this fight between these two girls, and then soon afterwards one of them dies. And then he over time learns about this organization called the Pale Horse, which is tied to arranging deaths. So soon afterwards, another woman is taken ill and calls for a Catholic priest, to give her, for her last rites mm-hmm. and to give her last confession so she can reach absolution. And he writes down, a list of names, on a piece of paper. But before he's able to, explain or, give this information to anyone else, he too is killed. He is hit over the head with Rebecca?
A kosh.
A kosh. From there, Mark hears about this as well. He's somehow really involved with the police department. And then he goes on from there to meet some modern witches in a converted inn called the Pale Horse. And it includes... three very different witches mm-hmm. and they talk about remote killing and using that as a method and they're doing a lot of woo-woo and showing off their different skills. And I think it was sort of interesting because we've got this sort of part of society coming in and just watching on as for amusement.
Right.
In a way.
They're kind of doing seances on demand.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that from there, Mark suspects that this remote killing is a service that they provide. Mm-hmm. And then also when he's there, he meets a wheelchair-bound man called Mr. Venables.
That's right.
And he thinks that they're linked to the murders. Mm-hmm. But Mark's girlfriend at the time, she doubts him. But then instead, she teams up with Ariana Oliver. And Ginger Corrigan and some others to uncover the death. So they eventually discover that the Pale Horse is operates by manipulating bets on death predictions.
Yes.
So rather than going to a man and saying, hey, I need you to knock off this person, you'd say 10 to 1 against them living for another 2 weeks,
right?
Which isn't really illegal. But so to actually get evidence of this, Ginger, Mark's new friend, poses a victim, and but then over time, thallium poisoning is revealed to be the actual cause of death rather than woo-woo remote killing by these witches.
Right.
And as much as it looks like it's the wheelchair-bound Mr. Venables, it's actually Osborne, the pharmacist, who's been behind this the whole time, who I don't think I've mentioned earlier.
No, you haven't, but that's fine.
In this synopsis, so that's a real nice moment to bring it up. But in the process of
what a surprise,
on,
yeah.
What a surprise. I think in the true nature, well, I thought it was going to be Lou, the owner of the pub, or the cafe who did it.
Oh, interesting. That would have been a twist.
Yeah, but who was, he was trying to help with the investigation earlier, and he mm-hmm. was trying to misdirect them, but he was using these poison products and working together to sort of create a perfect crime, because no one really was doing the actual murder themselves. It was at the end of the day, it was him, but everyone else was sort of helping behind it, put it Correct. All together. And yeah, and then after Osborne's arrest, Mark and Ginger become engaged.
Yes, it's a romance. Yeah. So that is, thank you very much for that synopsis.
I'm sorry it was so long.
It's fine.
Much shorter.
You took us through it. So it's interesting for me that in this book, that even though the evil is kind of wrapped up in the idea of like the occult or black magic, it's ultimately like medical science. That's the real weapon, right? Spiritualism is kind of a misdirection. So, you know, the reason I had recommended this book for us to do is because of its use of spiritualism and spiritual beliefs on the part of the villains. And do you, and as we've talked to, or as I talked about in the historical note, this is something that Christie's done like fairly frequently. Do you think that Christie portrays spiritualism fairly in this book?
Well, I think that does she treat it fairly? I think that, well, first of all, I mean, she's a product of her era.
Sure.
And so, like all her books, and there is some comments in there about old magic, voodoo, and then you can sort of see some hints of colonialism and racism, and this idea that, oh, the people from the global south are more affected by the belief in spiritual practices, but we are people of science and we're not affected so much.
Right.
And I think that it's a lot more nuanced than that, and some sure. of the way that her phrasing is just, yeah. And I think that ultimately it's the way she talks about spirituality in this book. I think that she's not, she doesn't really talk about the benefits so much.
Sure.
But at the same time, I think a lot of the characters are very interested and do seem to acknowledge that there are things beyond heaven and earth that, you know, we're aware of. And I think that ultimately there are going people who are in positions of power where there's like an imbalance of knowledge. So say, for instance, spirituality, or say, for instance, medicine, there are going to be people that abuse that power. I think, yeah. So the way she portrays it, I think that part of me was kind of hoping that the witches had no idea that they were actually killing people, but they were. They knew what they were doing.
They did. Yeah.
Even though they thought they were doing it, and I think they felt very powerful. I don't know what was up with their moral compass. But I think that overall, I think that this is it is an area where people can abuse their power. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's fair enough to point out.
Yeah. No, and I think what's interesting for me is that kind of the initial conflict of the book, or one of the initial conflicts, is Mark Easterbrook trying to get people to believe that this could be happening so that he could investigate it. And he first goes
yes.
to a medical examiner, and then he goes to his, quote, steady girlfriend who he can't kind of bear to call his girlfriend because she's so boring. And they just kind of keep, and you know, there are these really smart, modern, scientifically minded people. And they just like, this is ridiculous. We're not even going to engage with you in this. Mm-hmm. And it takes him a while to get to the kind of creative thinking that, would allow him to like participate in this investigation. Which is already a stretch mm-hmm. because he's not a cop. Like, you know, this is one of the things that Christie does that I always find funny is like there's some male narrator who just like gets involved in an investigation despite having no police training and not being involved right? in the police.
And they're totally okay with it.
The exact same thing happens in The Moving Finger, which has a narrator named Jerry, or the main character named Jerry. And he does the same thing where he just kind of like rocks up to like interrogations and is like, oh, can I join? And they're like, of course, come sit down. I think that part's funny, but I do think that is an interesting conflict because Christie's really framing it as like, he needs people to believe him. And mm-hmm. he's kind of fighting against almost himself going, I know this is silly, but there's just something about it that's pulling me.
It's true. Yeah. I think he found a lot of, he was so happy when he had, the camaraderie of the vicar's wife.
Yes.
He was just so relieved. And then also Ginger yes. at last. And I think that he just wanted someone to sort of consider that there was something else and know that like this is something worth pursuing.
Yes. And especially with, Ginger, I think is kind of like this plucky young woman who's kind of game. Whereas with Dane Calthorpe, I think she's very much like, if you think something's wrong, it probably is. Follow that intuition, whether or not it ends up being kind of a cult, it's something. And I think that kind of belief in yourself is what he kind of needs to hear. So I totally agree. I think those two characters, as well as Ariadne Oliver, are what kind of pushes him forward. How would you say?
Mm, exactly. I think it's really important that they are, I think it's really important to be able to have that open-mindedness and be able to push forward. And because that's actually what allowed them to solve the case ultimately.
Yeah, exactly.
And without that, then, I think it would have been very hard to put all these different pieces together.
Totally.
So it's sort of like, going through the veil.
Totally. And so the spiritualism that we see in this book is more about like mediumship and then the idea of like thought, suggestion of, the idea is like suggestion of murder, right? Like if you tell someone that they're going to die, that they will connect to their internal death wish and die somehow. The real kind of the spiritualism that we see and that is I think the most kind of supposed to give us the best visual is these seances with a medium.
Yes.
And how like that kind of spiritualism, which was very popular I guess around the Victorian times and a little bit after that, how would you say that's like similar or different to the way people approach astrology today? Like, do you see any similarities?
Well, I think there's been dramatic shifts in terms of how just spirituality in general, but also astrology. Mm-hmm. I think that there was more of a focus on the good and evil aspects and then being able to sort of partake in the evil to get good. And I think that you would read also like in terms of astrology, some of these like aspects and chart interpretations. And if you were born with a certain aspect, it would say, well, you're probably going to have some real issues with cancer or, you know, it was just like very dark, dark interpretations.
Oh, gosh.
And it's wild. And there's been a huge shift. And a lot of people would actually say that these shifts in terms of like how we talk about these things are also reflected in shifts in terms of the stars and moving into the age of Aquarius out of Pisces, but then also some of these outer planetary shifts, especially in terms of Pluto. Mm. But I think that in generational shifts, but I believe that, we do talk about astrology and spirituality differently. We have a different lens. And I think it's a more humanistic lens. I think that also that shift came about during the period where Jung was very into astrology and his interpretations, and it became much more focused on psychology and self-awareness rather than scaring people with different prophecies and determinism. So I think that it's a less scary world out there these days in terms of spirituality, although there are lots of pitfalls to avoid as well.
Sure. And it's interesting you say that, because I do think that is kind of what I guess I would call her the main witch, but Thyrza Gray, who is kind of the one who takes Mark Easterbrook aside and says, like, this is how the murders are happening. It's murder by suggestion. This is what people can do. She does kind of delve into that psychological aspect. And I think that is the beginning of his convincing, you know, because she's not talking about it being black magic so much as she's talking about it being a method of, like, subconscious connection.
I know. And then also when Ginger gets sick after they line her up to see what's going on, and their first thought is like, we need to get her to a psychiatrist.
Right.
And you're reading it and you're like, no, you really need to do some blood tests.
Yeah, exactly. Do some blood tests. Yeah, exactly. And so it is that thing of, like, if you can kind of shift the nexus of what you're like, rather than saying like, well, it's magic, it's saying like, well, it's psychology. You can kind of get people to buy into it. People who would consider themselves perhaps skeptical of magic are suddenly going, oh, wait, that does make sense. I thought that was a very interesting and smart way that Christie kind of shifted the narrative.
Yes. I think so, for sure. I guess it was set in 1961. And so I think that although it's just over 60 years ago, I think that part of me was sort of surprised at how much knowledge she sort of had on this topic and how that was well known at the time in terms of our thoughts and reality and how much, you know, obviously, like, they do so many studies these days in terms of the placebo effect and how strong that is and how the placebo effect varies depending on how much belief you have in your own medical system. So in Denmark, the placebo effect might be stronger or weaker than the US. And it all comes down to that belief. And so it's, and this is also at the same time, as much as this book focuses on spirituality, occult, practices, this is something that's also very relevant to religion as well.
Totally. No, I think I think we don't like to say that all these belief systems have connections between them, because we like to make some belief systems seem elevated above others. And certainly there are things to be said for all kinds of different belief systems. But ultimately, like, the kernel of faith is what kind of connects all those things. So you have to start at the same place, really.
Exactly.
So interesting.
Yeah. It is really interesting. I think there's just, like, it was so wonderful that it managed to explore so many different topics in one neat-sized volume.
Totally. And so, like, you know, you're not so much a Christie reader. Did you enjoy the book? What was your, like, takeaway, as not just in terms of astrology, but just in terms of as a reader?
As a reader, I really – what did I think? I really – no. I'm trying to put my finger on it. I think that I loved the puzzle of it. Mm-hmm. I loved the characters. I found myself laughing out loud at different points. Mm-hmm. I really loved the Ariana character.
Ariadne
Oliver.
Yeah.
As she was fantastic.
She is fantastic.
But overall, I think that, to be completely honest, one thing I find frustrating about, which I'm sure other readers delight in, is the fact that it's often a clue that's given at the end that makes it possible to know what's happening. So there's not enough given at the beginning to know who done it.
Yeah. So are you, like, you would want these books to be like a puzzle you can solve as well?
Yes, okay. I would prefer that. I used to like those kind of mystery novels yeah. when I was a kid. I want a gold star.
No, it's so, because different readers obviously read it differently. And I think there are a lot of readers who agree with you that they prefer when a book has all the pieces that they can build along with the book. Whereas I honestly don't even notice. Like for me, the puzzle of the book is so like beside the point almost, which I know is terrible to say about a mystery because it's like the whole point of the book. But I think it's just like a how you read kind of thing. But that's interesting to know. Yeah. That's interesting. Mm. Yeah.
Well, you are a Sagittarius, so you are very open into this.
Totally. I'm just so open.
To be honest, just so for listeners here, I rarely in our conversations point out that Rebecca's a Sagittarius or my astrology.
No, I think you never have before. That's so funny. But obviously we're talking about it now. But I'm so glad that you came on to talk about this in a, obviously we're like lighthearted and we're having fun, but like in a serious way, because I do think that Christie's use of spiritualism is really fascinating and really points to, as you were talking about, like she has an interest in this, whether or not she is a believer, I think is kind of beside the point. It's about being open-minded, being curious, being interested in how people live their lives. And she just is in all different kinds of people's lives. So, I love that we could explore that a bit.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's one thing that from my readings about Agatha Christie is that she just seems to be one of the most curious people around. And she was just always so observant and open. And I think that's just such a wonderful trait to see in a person and sort of have as a role model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I will say just in terms of this book, it's one of her later books, obviously, she writing in the 60s, but it was one of her kind of best received books of this period of time, because she did kind of, not all of her books, obviously, but a lot of the quality of her books did start to drop off a little bit later. And that's kind of critically noted. And this book was a little bit of an exception where people actually were like, really enjoyed it. And it was quite critically well received. So I think that's an interesting one for that reason.
I actually read that this is like one of her favorite books as well that she's written. And obviously in different interviews, she would highlight different books, but sometimes she'd say The Pale Horse and sometimes it would be something else. But yeah, I think she was very fond of this book.
I agree. And I think you can see that in the writing. Like it's quite it's not a dark book, but it's got heft to it. And I like that.
Yeah, exactly. No, thank you so much for suggesting it. And it's just been, it was really interesting to explore.
Oh, I'm so glad. So for listeners at home who are maybe like astrology newbies like me, where would you recommend that they start learning about astrology, reading about it, finding out about like their own birth charts, for example? Like where would you point them?
Well, I think that the first places you could turn to, someone like Susan Miller has a really nice website where she talks about astrology in a really positive, open-minded way. Mm-hmm. She talks about opportunities more rather than blacks and whites and what's going to happen. But and I think that she has so much passion and joy in her writing and so much love of life that it's really contagious. Mm. I also think that Charlie Nicholas does a fantastic job as well in her astrological app and her book as well. I would probably avoid, I don't know if I'm going to rub anyone up the wrong way with saying this, but personally, I'm not a fan of CoStar. Mm-hmm. I think that it reflects some more black and white thinking. And I think so much of astrology and spirituality is the language that people use to communicate it.
Yeah.
And I think that that is sort of what I'm really excited about with in future creating this woo-woo website. Mm-hmm. Woo-woo.oo.
That's woo-woo.oo, everybody. What?
Oh, at the end.
Oh, exactly.
And and I think that that's something that I really want to explore more in terms of just making sure that like these different when you're interpreting signs and charts and also tarot as well, which is a major interest of mine. I think that a lot of it comes down to how you're communicating it.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
And so where would you like to be found by the people listening? And if so, where can they find you? other than woo-woo.oo, which we will obviously have in the episode notes.
Yes, this is it's currently just a blank landing page at the moment. This is I've finally bit the bullet a couple of weeks ago with this, but I think that otherwise, to find me, I'm on Instagram. Freya McComish is my handle, and then we also have Rebecca and my baby, Scandinavia Standard. Yeah. So that's how we met.
That's right. Yeah. So all of that will be in the episode notes, and also the links to the astrologers that you mentioned. We'll put that in there as well, so people can find that. And
fantastic.
Yeah. And I just want to say thank you so much for doing this and for doing Agatha Christie's birth chart. This is just like so interesting and fun and something I've never thought of before. And I'm like really glad to have that information now.
Yeah, I'm so glad to share some more with you about that. There's loads more that you could delve into, but we could be here for days.
Once again, thank you, Freya McComish, for being here. This was so fun.
Oh, it was so fun, Rebecca. Pleasure chatting as always.
As always. Okay, have a great night.
Thanks. Bye. Bye.
Thank you to our producer, Kate Crichel, and our sound engineer, Winter Robinson. To stay up to date and get some extra fun info, you can follow us on Instagram at TeaAndMurder. Rating and reviewing us really helps, so please do that if you feel so inclined. We're on all your favorite podcast platforms. Remember to follow us there and recommend us to anyone you think might need a little tea and or murder in their lives. Get ready for the next episode by reading An Appointment with Death. Rent it from your local library, buy from your local independent bookstore, or if you need to buy online, we recommend bookshop.org, which supports independent bookstores with every purchase. A link for next episode's book can be found in the episode notes. Thanks for joining us for this episode of Tea and Murder. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.